Thank God it's over. It's my first thought.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, a weekly look at everything going on inside the world of CinemaSins. I'm Aaron Dyster, and I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And Danae Hughes.
Hello, hello.
We write for CinemaSins and TV Sins and do various other things inside the CinemaSins universe as well. Today, the role of Jonathan's creepy echo will be played by Danae Hughes.
No, we're not doing this.
We're not doing this.
Sorry. I had to wait it out. I had to wait for Jonathan to do something so Danae could play.
I won't be able to like survive if we keep doing this because I'll be laughing so much. That's amazing.
Oh, man. Good to see you guys. I got to tell you, there's two things I really look forward to on this weekly thing. I mean, there's several, but the two main things. Number one, hanging out with you guys, just having this time to, like, the stuff you hear in the outtakes is because when we hang out, we talk about all the stuff that we kind of want to talk about with each other. And then the second part...
Or in this case, I just leave.
Well, that is true. Danae didn't leave for a good portion of the pre-show today. But then the other part is hanging out with the live audience of our Sync Club members as well. Just kind of, you know, commenting and having fun with that kind of stuff. And I'm really enjoying just kind of this weekly, let's all hang out, chat, talk about stuff that's on the channels. And yeah, it's fun stuff. So if you're interested in like checking out the live video as we record this, that is something that you can do as a Sync Club member. And if you haven't checked out the Sync Club at Patreon, it's patreon.com/cinemasins. You can check that out. That's not the only perk. There's lots of really fun stuff that happens there. But if you haven't checked it out yet, I'd encourage you to check that one out. Danae, what's the problem? Was it the slurp?
What was
the
that?
Fact that you slurped right into the microphone while I was talking? I could have cut that out, but I'm not now. Nope, leaving it now. In fact, I may amplify it and play it again right now. Here it is, Danae's slurp. There you go. That'll take us in to the Sinside Scoop.
What's he building in there?
We're going to take a look at the videos from the week, the process of sinning them, how we felt about the stuff we are sinning. We kick it off in commercial sins land, where I have written on the Snickers Betty White commercial. If you remember, this was from the 2010 nice. Super Bowl. And yeah, this was basically the idea being that Betty White is who you become if you don't have a Snickers. And so...
Which is just such an odd concept because yeah. You think that this commercial... in and of itself would incentivize everyone to not eat a Snickers.
Right, we all want to be Betty White.
Who
well,
wouldn't?
And also there's like, well, yeah, no, I agree with you. Like this commercial is not appetizing. There's like mud and like mm-hmm. people are dirty
yeah.
and like there is nothing about this commercial where I'm like, I want to have a Snickers right now.
I do like the concept,
I don't
want to
eat anything.
Right.
Because yeah. you know like, everybody smells like sweat and mud yeah. and oh, well.
I feel like, though, this is, to me, a really clever angle for a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that when you get hungry, you turn into somebody else and then you're bringing in this funny kind of version of this normal person. So we're seeing a celebrity, but they're actually just a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
I still think these are one of the most clever commercials I've seen.
Yeah, I do. I really liked this commercial. It was one of my favorites that year during the Super Bowl. And really enjoy it. I'll start with some thoughts since I wrote on this, just some behind the scenes on a couple sins. One of my favorite things was getting to use my philosophy degree with the final tag of "you're not you when you're hungry," and then the sin being ontological fallacies. And I got to bring back the idea of ontology and what is being and what does it mean to be you. So that was fun to be able to use my my training. You know, don't let anybody ever tell you that you won't get anything out of a philosophy degree, because someday you may be writing sins.
Someday.
need something like that. And then I don't know why, but I think encroachment is the funniest penalty in football. I have mm-hmm. no idea why this is. It cracks me up anytime it's a penalty. So just the ability to go, what's next? Encroachment. That was fun as well. So I want to.
Well, that's
that.
And I don't get it. I've never. I mean, I'm sure it would be easy to look up, but I don't care to. I'm kind of with you on that, because there's offsides, there's false starts,
right.
And then there's just randomly encroachment. Mm-hmm. I know somebody's going to be like, you're an idiot, it's this. But I just,
no,
yeah.
No, there's a clear difference. And I have never taken the time to look it up either. It just cracks me up. It's just like, we have this version of being offsides that is so distinct that we need to call it encroachment.
One, it's the same penalty too, right? So why wouldn't you just call it offsides? Like, none of it makes any sense to me.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. What about you guys? Danae, what were some of your thoughts on this one?
As I've already said, I really enjoy the Snickers commercials, and it was kind of fun to watch it again because it's been a long time since I've seen it, obviously. But I liked the sin that you wrote, the eat a Snickers and then whoa, 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 they're token doting female. There's a football game going on right now. You think you can just march onto the field with a confectionery treat anytime you want? Wait for timeout, Shilly Wonka. I thought that was really clever. I liked it.
Nice. What about you, Jonathan?
I like this commercial too. I think I'm trying to remember what the other ones were. I feel like I'm trying to remember what the other celebrities were. I feel like this is one of the better ones, if not the best one. But I'm having a hard time remembering the other ones in the series. Yeah. But I always enjoyed these, and I love Betty White. I mean, who doesn't love Betty White?
For sure.
It's going to be a sad day. Speaking of that, which Abe Vigoda's in this too, which I had forgotten and missed that dude. But speaking of which, that was one of the sins I really liked. I had written down, like, that's a fucking Vigoda Snickers. You put some respect on that name.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite was, this commercial vastly overestimates the speed of human metabolism.
It's so true. Why would it be immediate?
It's very true.
It's like your body's got to process that stuff before you become yourself. It's not like a magic trick. Very nice. So there you go. Snickers, Betty White for commercial sins. We'll move into TV sins now. We're doing What If, guys. The Marvel show, the animated Marvel show that takes a look at possible.
Take a drink if you're surprised. That's right. Not very many people are drinking right now.
TV sins does a Marvel or Star Wars property on Disney Plus cliche. Continuing. So we did episode one, Captain Carter Were the First Avenger. So again, the full title is What If Captain Carter Were the First Avenger? This was Ian and I doing this one. So what did Ian have to say about the process on this one?
Ian said, I really like the concept behind What If. On paper, it's a great sandbox to entertain fan theories and the more niche comic storylines that you couldn't otherwise squeeze into the MCU. Unfortunately, the execution hasn't done it for me. I don't think Marvel were bold enough with most of their ideas and played it out all quite safe.
Mm-hmm.
Played it all quite safe. Mm-hmm. I think I added the word out. I just did that thing in my mind where I went back through our editing process where the narrator added the word out.
There you go.
This episode was particularly frustrating because Marvel couldn't keep their Rogers out of my Carter. Considering this was meant to be a female-centric story, fucking Steve managed to turn up and save the day twice. The animation actually looks a bit cheap. I'm certain it's a stylistic choice, but it's distracting as hell. And those are my thoughts. Wait, that was an entirely thoughtful analysis with no digs at Jonathan and no shenanigans to Danae. What is happening? Am I growing? Growing. Erections. Also, fuck Bucky, man.
Yeah. I will jump off a couple things he said with my thoughts on the show. The animation is an interesting one. Neither Ian and I really liked it. I just didn't work for me. As I've been watching more episodes, I've gotten used to it. And what I do like about the animation is I think they are using animation well in providing some like striking visuals. Like, the style of animation still isn't my favorite, but I love some of the visuals that they're painting on screen, especially as the season has gone on. In this one, my main thing with this one was, if you're going to make it about Captain Carter, make it about Captain Carter. I know everybody loves Steve. I know everybody misses Captain America if you do it this way. But to have him be like the ex machina twice in this episode to save her when it's her story, I don't know. It really came off wrong to me. So I was glad we kind of hit that hard during the video. But yeah, I really enjoyed writing on it. Had a great time with this one. One of Ian's sins that I really liked was the colonoscopy sin that he wrote, which is really funny. And an interesting story behind that one. That was originally its own sin, and then we kind of combined the sin it was in at first didn't quite work, and so we had this Colonel Flynn survives this after he says something extremely sexist, and so then we kind of added it to the end of that one, which I think makes that sin just absolutely sing. So yeah, the Colonel hole, Coloscopy sin was one of my favorites. And then the other thing that I had to get out there was the what if punctuation. I had, like, I don't understand the ellipsis followed by the question mark. And I researched how ellipses are supposed to be used. And I'm getting some pushback in the comments, which is fine. I get it. But anyway, so that was another one. The one where I was like, look, it should either be ellipses and then ellipses and question mark, or it should just be the ellipses, or it should just be the question mark. Because, otherwise it's a complete sentence and you're missing part of the sentence. So because those ellipses, they aren't apostrophes, they're ellipses. So they don't stand in for something that's not there. They say there's more coming. Hold on. That's what they say. Anyhow.
I did have more from Ian that I skimmed over because I looked away. So let's continue with his thoughts, because he did have a couple specifics to mention too. I don't think any of it overlapped with what you just said, though. So he continued that this is another one of those scripts where you guys had a lot of overlap between the two of you.
Yes.
And felt like there was going to be suspicions that he had read your script, Aaron. The standout was for when Carter was fighting the squid monster, and we both came up with a let me just grab this sort of convenience sin.
Mm-hmm.
There were slight variations, but they were so close that during the combine process, I genuinely couldn't remember which one was mine. He continues by saying, having to explain the randomness of the button guy joke and the following callback to Danae was a lot of fun in this script, which is true. So I was a shadow on this script, and there's this button guy sin. I don't understand. But Ian says,
well,
it's
coming up in Keeping Tabs.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Ian says, for some reason, this made perfect sense to Aaron and I, but Danae thought it was too random. Do you hear me, guys? Danae thought it was too random. Too random for freaking Danae. Danae, the queen of random, which is true. The sin that he points out was, this doesn't concern you. You're lucky to be in the room, was beautiful. Title of my sex tape joke. The best ones are the ones that aren't even remotely sexual. I tip my hat to thee, Mr. Dicer, although I think being able to draw from personal experience is cheating just a touch. Oh, shit.
That's the whole point. That is the whole point of the TV Sins narrator have the title of my sex tape question mark thing.
Yeah. Which is in the next one, too.
Before we get away from this, though, I will say I'm with Danae. I actually had that written down. I don't understand the button guy callback.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I guess Aaron will explain it later.
Well, I can explain that part now. I was gonna explain the.
I tried to cut it.
It sounded funny. Like it's funny. Like when Aaron says it, it's really funny. But then I'm like, what am I laughing at?
I know. Same.
That is the sin. The sin is that the show takes this. The sin is that the show takes this button guy comment that's just out of nowhere, and that we sin, and then makes a callback to it like it's this big joke or whatever. And so it's like, button guy callback. Anyways, I love callbacks. I love sinning shows for callbacks. I think it's.
But you say it twice, right? Yeah. That's where I got confused.
Yeah.
And then the second time, you also add ours is better. So that even confused me more.
Because in the first one,
I'm not saying I didn't like the video. Okay, so, I did love the video.
No. I think I can explain
this. I'm not saying this is one confusing thing.
I guess I didn't even realize during the process that this was the part that wasn't understood. We make a button guy callback with one of our sins. Okay. And so then the narrator's like going button guy callback, like it's his own callback. Like he's saying he made his own callback. Then the show does it later. And so the narrator repeats button guy callback. And then like, well, ours was better.
I'm still so confused. I'm just going to quit trying.
A squared plus B squared divided by the hypotenuse.
I'm even more. Actually, I kind of wish I hadn't asked the question, because now I think I'm even more confused.
I know. Yeah.
It would have been better just being ignorant.
Man,
about
I need
whatever
Ian here. Like, it made complete sense
but,
to us.
But
no. We need a flow chart.
But it was so funny. Like, I was 100% like laughing when I heard you say button guy callback. But then I'm like, I don't know what I'm laughing at. But it was funny.
Well, I feel like that most of the time. So
Fair enough. I'll take it. Fair enough.
I don't mean it mean.
No. I didn't take it that way.
I think I disagree with you guys on the stylistic of the show, though.
A lot of people do.
I love the animation. The first time I saw it, I mean, it was different, but I genuinely grew to really appreciate it. I think it's beautiful. I think one of the things that they do is they're lighting things from a whole bunch of different angles, almost like the CG ability to just kind of add lighting sources. They just kind of went ham on that. So it's really interesting to look at. And then there's always these different colored lights coming at different angles of these different characters. But I've never seen anything like it before. And it's really beautiful to me. And it feels very comic-like also, which is a super cool thing to see. There's a couple episodes that are coming up where there's these fight scenes that are just magnificent to watch, in my opinion. So I think I'm on the side, firmly on the side of, I loved the animation.
Yeah, and I actually think maybe the majority of people are. If I'm reading, you know, like responses that I've seen, people seem to love the animation. It just, both of us wrote Sins on, you know, thinking it looked cheap. So, and I think it was the cell shading got rotoscoping pregnant and delivered in the Uncanny Valley Sin that that we used for that. But yeah. Danae, were you doing your stuff or were you finished?
I can. Okay. I liked the sin about the heels, like you won't be needing your heels anymore, and just like she never actually needed those in the first place, or women aren't soldiers, and you know, just like the Colonel Flynn survived this, but then going into the Colonel Hole, and that, you guys talked about that one already. The sin where it was like, I think Carter says, well, then we better start dancing. And
this is one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's so good.
And she's meaning, like, I guess, killing. And then there's the sin is just Captain Carter's dancing looks strangely like murder. I just the way that one so casually, you know, put together was delightful. And I enjoyed that one a lot. And then at the end, the when the Watcher says, I observe all that transpires here, but I do not, cannot, will not interfere. And the sin is simply, then is there really any point to you at all? which, having continued to watch the show and continued to experience the expositional creature that is the Watcher, I really enjoyed him being sinned, it being sinned, them being sinned.
Well, and I feel like he does interfere, like, later on. Like, I've mentioned that, and I've had pushback on it, but I feel like there are episodes where he interferes, 100% interferes. But
I will tell you,
I don't know what interfere means. Boy, maybe it's like the button callback guy.
Boy, I think I'm the only one who's up to date on What If, based on how you guys are talking about this. But yeah, the last two episodes, I'm not going to spoil anything, but this is intentional on the show's part. His idea about not interfering or interfere, like, that is all.
So even though it's an anthology, there is some continuity to it.
It is not an anthology. I will just say that. It is the episodes are important. It's not a pure anthology. Because it is a type of anthology, but it is a connected anthology. That's about as spoilery as I'm going to get with it. But
now that you say that, I guess I did assume like all these were kind of existing in a similar, like, you know, universe or something. So that does make, actually, that wouldn't be really an anthology. It would just be different stories.
Correct. And they're all canon and they're all about different multiverses that stuff is happening in. But yes. But that is to come down the road, possibly, that conversation.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Jonathan, what about you? Danae, were you done? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Jonathan, what about you?
So I remembered this comic book when I was really young, and I remember it would always intrigue me when I would go to the comic store, because it always had these wild covers. It was like, what if Spider-Man had Incredible Hulk's powers, you know, and it would show, you know. And then I didn't read it all the time, but when I would pick up an issue, I always remember always being just slightly disappointed, because it just never felt like it lived up to whatever it was that they were, you know, saying. I'm sure there are examples of ones that worked beautifully, but I just, in my opinion, like the few I read. So I wasn't a huge fan of the comic, but I feel like the show's kind of doing the same thing, where I like the concept, but then I don't always necessarily, like, I guess I've seen like four episodes now, four or five, maybe four. And I mean, I would say one or two of them have been better than the other ones, but like, I still just feel like a lot of it's just you know, what if this person replaced this person? And then they kind of just do the same thing. And I don't know, to me, for whatever reason, that's not that interesting. But I didn't think about it as much while I was watching it, but you guys bringing up how Steve still factors into this so much.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, they just undermine the idea that, well, maybe it's not an undermining. Maybe it's the point that they're trying to make. I don't know. But the idea to open the concept of what if something else happened and the universe as we know it is actually this version of it. So you instantly assume that that would mean that the female would be the hero, the heroine, have the authority and have the power. But she's actually she's actually rescued again multiple times.
Yep.
So it's like, did they actually do that on purpose? Or is it so ingrained in story writing that it is impossible to allow a woman to fully take control and it not be offensive?
I think,
or do they think it's uninteresting? I mean, I don't know.
I think it's an audience thing mostly. Now, I think that audience thing is ingrained in just the sexism that has been in pop culture for so long. But I don't think for the writers it was like some sort of. I don't think the majority of it was any kind of like subconscious bias. I think it was more about, we got to give Captain America something to do because people love Captain America, right? Like, it was like, whereas I'm sitting there going, I would love to see just like scrawny Steve Rogers be scrawny Steve Rogers through this whole thing, you know, and, you know, let him be in peril and her save him. Let him be used as, you know, fridge him a little bit, you know, make him a motivating part of, you know, a decision she makes or something, like women have been relegated to for years in storytelling. But I think it would, for me, I think the majority of it probably came from, if I'm guessing, the idea that, oh, we got to have Chris Evans do more, you know, because people love him so much.
I will say one thing I do kind of like about the show, though, is that they, for the most part, they are getting the actors to do the voice work, which I think is really cool. Because especially I noticed that, like, I don't know if that's the next episode, but the Guardians of the Galaxy one with T'Challa, you know, I love that, like, you know, Benicio doing the voice of the Collector, I think adds so much to that episode, you know.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I will say it does stand out when it's not the person, though, now. Like, because it usually is.
For sure.
When it's not, it's like, whoa, that is not Tony Stark.
You know. In that episode I was just talking about, like, Dave Bautista doesn't voice Drax. But everybody else is the same. And then so it's really weird when it's like, oh, that's just somebody doing, like, a Dave Bautista impersonation. I agree with that. So that does kind of take you out a little bit. And as far as that is weird, though, that they went that way. Because, I mean, it's not like the MCU has not had movies with, like, well, I mean, God, they had WandaVision, you know, and they Captain Marvel, and, like, the strong female characters in Black Panther. And, I mean, it's not like they can't have women fight and not needing a man's help. So that is odd that in this situation they chose to go that route. But I think Aaron's probably onto something there about they felt like you had to still have Steve in there doing something. I don't know. Dumb. I didn't understand the Iron Man 3 shaming. I mean, if you want to knock the fourth best MCU movie, that is on you. That is on you. The best Iron Man movie. Just want to throw that out there.
I'm loving this Ian Jonathan rivalry.
I didn't know who wrote that.
That's why I threw that out there. I'm stoking the rivalry.
No, look, I admitted this when Barrett and Chris and I did the Shang-Chi mini pod. Mm-hmm. I admitted that I am on an island when it comes to Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
I think other people like Iron Man 3. I just don't think there's very many people that like it as much as I do.
Right. Yeah.
And it's fine. I'm okay with that. I live with that every day. So I'll be all right, guys. I also love the thing early on that, am I going to point out every tiny discrepancy between this and the first Avenger? Only time will tell. I was pretty sure Ian wrote that too, because there were two question marks.
Yes.
I'm learning. And going off of what I think Danae, I don't know if Danae mentioned this exact scene. I don't think I heard her say this, but just talking about just the kind of the insulting nature of a lot of the stuff they did with Agent Carter or Captain Carter. where the line in the show was, and you won't be needing those heels anymore. And then the sin was, she never needed them ever. I just loved that.
So true.
It was a really funny video. And even if I didn't get one of the jokes,
one of the running jokes. So
yeah.
I did also want to give a shout out to Ian for calling Bucky Stevens' other love interest. The chat, comments really loved that as well. I thought that was really fun to play off their relationship in that way. And fun times. So, all right, let's move into Rick and Morty season 5 finale. Rick, Mirai, Jack, Danae, and I writing on this one. Danae, why don't you go first? What are some of your thoughts on the finale?
Thank God it's over. It's my first thought.
There was somebody in the comments that was like, "I'm so sorry. One of the writers hates writing on this. I love them so much."
Wait, how do they know? You listen to BTS listen to the podcast. And you know.
Yeah, they probably listen to the podcast.
I'm ready. I'm ready for this to be over and done with, and it is now, and I'm so thankful. It's difficult to sin Rick and Morty. It's difficult to talk about it every fucking week. And I don't know. Did it end the way that it should have ended? Maybe. I think back on the season and whatever arc I thought was happening, like this sort of understanding of who evil Morty may have become, evil Morty, but that's not at all what it was. So it kind of undoes some early thoughts about what could be happening. So then we end this season in my mind, and I could be fucking wrong because none of this it doesn't make any sense to me in a lot of ways, and it shouldn't, which is why it's so fucking frustrating to talk about it all the goddamn time.
According to the comments, it makes complete sense.
I'm glad. This is our Rick and Morty, and maybe they're just evolving or something like this. I don't know, guys. This show. You know, when you're sending something, you're trying to pick it apart, and you're also trying to make sense of it. And when it's Rick and Morty, it's just it takes the fun away from Rick and Morty, because I would rather just watch Rick and Morty and be done with it and be like, oh, that's a Rick and Morty episode. But then we're trying to find reasoning inside of it, and I just don't want to consume this content to find reason. I want to be able to just enjoy it because it's dumb or it's silly or it's strange or whatever. But they are trying to make deeper points, and so. But then the deeper points are undone by their own writers. And so I don't know. I'm fucking done with this shit. Here's some shit we wrote that I liked. First of all, I thought Aaron's idea to break this up into two CinemaSense episodes within itself was perfect. Mm-hmm. Because there's something about finding a way to kind of like end a season, which now that we're doing a full season, the quote unquote pressure is sort of on, and that you want to remember some of the concurrent sins. You want to try to wink and nod back to things that you did early in the season. And so it's a different level of paying attention to the writing process. Mm-hmm. And you also kind of want to go out with a punch, just like they want to go out with a punch. And so I just loved seeing Aaron's idea, because it's just absolutely perfect to consider that we're sending each show individually. And really, Aaron carried this entire script, because I am Rick and Morty. So The Office, I hate that show. Rick and Morty, I like the show, but I hate sinning it. So the hate level is similar, but like flipped in different ways. And I'm just like, I'm on Rick and Morty burnout, guys. And so my sins are becoming things like, fuck this, which reminds me of The Office. So every once in a while, I'll be like, oh, there's a sin I can kind of find finally. But it was just a relief to see Aaron's, you know, coming in going, yes, let's kill this last one. So this is completely, almost completely just an Aaron delight for me. We both sinned the count of the swords, the sword wings that came out, which was kind of fun. I liked Aaron's sin about Morty survives this working, because it was a combination of this works and Morty surviving. That's when he's splitting back into the, they take the old Morty and they split him up, and then they somehow make the young Morty again. The complexity of what was going on in some of the flashbacks, and, you know, Morty realizing what they're created for on the next deeper level of that this world is creating. Like, he sees all this shit happen and Morty's like, what the fuck is this? And the sin is just, no idea, man, you're on your own with this one. again, sometimes those simple sins is all it needs to be. I did enjoy the title of my sex tape, a couple sins back to back, but probably my favorite is the final one where the attempt for the narrator to recap what he assumes is happening here at the very end. It was perfectly done, and I loved how it was like, yay, you know, like this big long sort of explanation as to what could be happening right now and trying to kind of put it all back together while sinning it at the same time, and then just yay. I thought it was great. So well done, Mr. Dicer.
Thanks. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this one. Don't sell yourself short. One thing I really love about Danae is the fact that even when she is not into a show or is sick of sinning something, she does find a way to like add some fun to the sins. I know what you feel internally, but I'm telling you externally, you send some good stuff. For instance,
just want to stab it.
The puss of fur was a great catch. Like, you know, just that there's this joke right there that you completely missed. I loved that. And then the one that made me laugh a lot was just the absolute astonishment and anger at the color of the walls. And
what is that fucking color?
Just like the narrator is so mad that it's some sort of awful, weird sherbet color.
I have more on that on Keeping Tab.
Oh, nice, nice. Who purposely paints their walls like this? I love it when the narrator gets really angry about really inconsequential stuff. So I wanted to mention those. And then as far as kind of like behind the scenes of stuff I wrote, the coming up with the names for the characters that we don't see at any time in this episode was really fun.
That was awesome.
Went with Packy Chan for the one that looked like Pac-Man, Mr. Mole Map, and then the one, the Boo Brina, the unrealistic body image witch.
I love that one.
Somebody in the chat was like, look, I've seen people with a body like that. And I was like, that's not what the unrealistic is in reference to. It's not. It's in reference to the image. It's in reference to the expectation. But anyway, so that was really fun as well. So I had a good time with it. I still really enjoy the show. It has its ups and downs for me. But I love that they're unhinged in a way that just allows them to do whatever they want and have fun and explore weird ideas, even if I don't quite understand them. They can be explained for the most part. And if you go through the comments, there is a lot of people being like, it's actually not that hard. It makes complete sense. And I don't want to guarantee you, but I assume many of those people have taken the time to go to the fan wiki to watch a video explaining it, you know, like all those kind of things. I don't know. I mean, yes, you can watch it and get what you get. When I watched it, I understood a little bit about how Rick had separated these universes into ones where he was the smartest being alive and ones where he wasn't. And so he had this, you know, whatever it's called, curve that separated those two universes so he could be the smartest man in the universe in all you know, the certain existence or whatever. But that doesn't mean it doesn't mean that part is completely understandable on watching the episode. It also doesn't mean that what that means makes sense, right? Like, so how does that practically work? How is that something that's, and so the show does this thing where it just like, it's crazy, it's wacky, it's fun. And then it's also like, go ahead and think about this for the next month straight. You know, it's just like, I don't know that I want to, but it is fun for those who do. So, I still am having a really good time with the show in general. Jonathan, what are some of your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, and to be clear, I mean, Danae said, though, she likes the show.
Right.
It's just sending it is not always fun. And I agree. I mean, it's a weird one to send sometimes. I definitely watch it. I think I have to rewatch this more than most shows of this length. When I'm sending, like, I'm definitely like, you know, I'm definitely having an easier time with something like The Simpsons, you know, than I am Rick and Morty. I like it overall. I think it's interesting that there's a bunch of different ways to watch Rick and Morty. I think I'm definitely more casual with it. I don't really think about what it's trying to say half the time. I just enjoy the craziness of it and, you know, fun pop culture references and stuff like that. I think that's more my speed with it. So I wasn't really thinking about how this connected. I like the Rick and Two Crows stuff. I think I'm sure that would become like a one joke kind of thing, but I was kind of thinking like, I'm kind of sad this already ended. Like, I kind of want more of this.
Yeah.
I did enjoy balding beer gut Morty a little bit. I thought that was kind of mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of humorous and disturbing. Mm-hmm. But but no, but it was okay. You guys did a great job with it, sending it. You guys have mentioned a lot of this stuff. I loved when you guys were going through the questions about the anti-hero and you did the, is Uncle Joey an anti-hero every time he insists someone cut something out? I thought that was hilarious. I like the narrator trying to go through all the owl legends and owl things and realizing they're all urban legends. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really, like the narrator realizing that his beliefs are wrong about owls. And the simplicity of this one just killed me, but I just loved wearing clothes under clothes for that long. I just thought that was really fun.
Yeah, it's so true.
A long time to wear clothes under clothes.
I know, it is. And I would never think about that. And then when you say it, it's just like, oh, that's true.
Why would you do that?
I also was very confused about what button guy had to do with this episode.
Why is there a button guy callback in Rick and Morty? That makes no sense. I'm just going to throw button guy callback into like scripts now. Just all sorts of scripts.
Please
I was just thinking though, talk about callbacks. It would have been funny if Danae had started talking about like What If or something and said, and what I really thought was weird was when it ended in genocide.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Rick Marai Jack, the season finale of Rick and Morty. All right, let's move into music video sins. Lil Nas X, That's What I Want. Barrett writing on this one. This reminds me, you watch Masked Singer, don't you, Jonathan?
Oh, yeah.
There was somebody whose initial guess for one of the contestants was one of the Lils.
Yes.
There's so many Lils in rap right now that it was just like one Nicole, of the Lils.
Yeah, like, Nicole Scherzinger or whatever how you say her last name.
That made me laugh.
That was great. And she was not right.
No, she was not. So this is Lil Nas X. What did you guys think? Jonathan, why don't you kick us off? What were some of your thoughts on this one?
I told you guys earlier, I honestly forgot to go back through it and write down like favorite sins, but I reviewed this one. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I've seen it a few times. I've seen the video a few times and it's a really funny video. I like Lil Nas X, like as the person. I think I love the confidence. I love just he's just not afraid to do whatever he wants to do with these videos. You know, we already talked about in the past, like the one that was set at Christmas and all that kind of stuff. And you kind of get more of that here where he's just, you know, he's just pushing it. And I love that aspect of it. The mm-hmm. song itself, it's fine. I don't know that there's anything about the song itself, but I almost feel like with him, like that's not even what I'm interested in. I'm just curious. I think he has done something that a lot of artists don't do. I think he really puts not that they don't put time into their videos, but I think there is something about the videos that's like really important to him, right? Like I just feel like he's always trying to like, you know, test the boundaries and the limits of what he can do with a music video. And I think I find that more fascinating than the songs themselves. Mm-hmm. That might even be the problem. Maybe the video itself is so much, I don't know, maybe it kind of undersells, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but maybe the video kind of masks the song a little bit. Like I'm not even thinking about the song because I'm just more interested in what's going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I like the guy. Like I'm a fan. This song just didn't really catch me. And I honestly, having just heard it 2 days ago, I couldn't even tell you how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
But it's a very funny video as always. I think Barrett does really well with these Lil Nas X videos. He's even expressed, you know, I don't know that he's like a fan, but I think he acknowledges that he thinks this is funny that we do this in the past. So that's always cool.
Yeah. Danae, what about you?
I think there are some artists that come at a time when the mold needs to be broken and conversations need to happen. And there's just these really brave artists that just put stuff out there that pushes boundaries. And I think Lil Nas X is one of those. I think Lady Gaga is mm-hmm. maybe someone who I can compare him to in that mm-hmm. she did shocking things visually, vocally, lyrically, and the following that she gained from that really gave a platform for people who didn't feel like they had a voice. And I think Lil Nas X is doing that in a completely new era, which is always amazing to watch, especially for songwriting and, you know, because people really are drawn to music and music speaks to people. Mm-hmm. So I just think that I think he's really fucking brave to come out with his sexuality, to be a black man who, you know, statistically anyone who is just not, you know, the stereotypical straight person, blah, 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 which is not really a stereotype. Like I love that the mold is being broken. It's already been broken, but he's going back over these. So like if you break foundational pieces, there's these big chunks that come off. And I feel like Lil Nas X is going to the chunks that have already fallen off of the foundations it's broken. And he's just taking a jackhammer to those big chunks and breaking them even more down so that people can really take a deeper look at our biases. That's a great metaphor.
Yeah.
And yep. I don't care what kind of, with him and with some others, it's almost like I almost don't really care what the song is. I'm just fascinated to watch what he's doing. And I think that's what you're saying, Jonathan. Is it a song that's going to stand out to me? Does it speak to me? No, but this album, the entire album, is kind of him pouring out. So he also is one of those artists, I feel like he could put an album out and put a mediocre song out and someone's going to grab onto it and create content from it. And I hope that he has a really good powerhouse of people with him that can kind of keep him steady, because an artist that has the power and the attention like he does could easily, you know, have any great number of things happen. And now we're looking at Lady Gaga. She's doing a jazz album right now. Did you guys see that?
I hadn't seen that, no.
No, I hadn't seen that. I know she's a huge heavy metal fan, though, Bennett. And she's always wanted to do a heavy metal album.
With Tony Bennett.
Which I think would be awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. They're really good friends.
So you've got this artist that started off, you know, and I'm comparing the two of them purposefully, but like you've got Lady Gaga who started off, you know, just like breaking molds and doing shocking things. And has shown her absolute fucking talent. She's been not only in movies, but then also just like the concerts that she's done, the tributes that she's done, the vocal work she's done. And now she's doing this incredible album in a totally new genre to show the audience the importance of jazz. I want Lil Nas X to be able to have that kind of a career where there's a longevity and there's not this burnout. And I think sometimes when you're doing brave things and talking about brave content and pouring out your brave heart, there can be more pitfalls and there can be, unfortunately, more people that can kind of come at you. I feel like he has the ability to withstand, and I hope he's got support, just like I hoped Lady Gaga had support too. So I'm down for it. As far as the video is concerned, the one that I wrote down was the metaphor about the shooting star. I just thought that was really funny. The lyric was about a shooting star, and he said that one kind of means that you're gonna be a flash in the pan and nobody wants that. And then he kind of digs at the old town road days for country music. So I thought that was clever.
Yeah, no, that was a really good
and
one.
I will say real quick, I'm not gonna be shocked at all if like 5 years from now, though, I go back on some of this and I do actually start enjoying it, because sometimes it takes a second to really get, you know, to get in. Mm-hmm. Because Lady Gaga is a great example of that, where I didn't really pay much attention to her when she came out. I mean, I knew who she was and I thought it was cool, but I didn't really get that much into the songs. And then I saw her perform at the Super Bowl.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She is amazing.
And I think that for some reason, that really blew me away. And then that sent me down a path where I was checking out her full albums and stuff. And then I was finding all these songs that I really liked, you know. So that could happen here. He kind of reminds me of Prince, too, in a way. Like, I feel like he's
going to... that moment in the music video when he's holding onto the guitar and in that dress gave me Prince vibes.
Well, and also, like, no Prince album sounds like the other Prince album. Like, I think that's interesting with Prince fans. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that would say, like, Purple Rain or something, but I feel like if you talk to a lot of Prince fans, you're going to get a lot of different favorite albums, because they're all just so unique. He's definitely an artist that could mess around with all these different things and do the same thing. Sorry, Aaron. Didn't mean to...
No, you're good. You're good. I hadn't started yet. I think if you want to know how I feel about Lil Nas X and this video and all that, just rewind the podcast and listen to Jonathan and Danae say their thoughts. I echo everything you guys said. 100%. So I don't need to re-say it. As far as the video goes, the video steals the plot twist from Up in the Air, Sin. Really made me laugh. And it says, "And I'm sorry, but I'm a little less invested in this whirlwind romance than the one that was built over several months by George Clooney and Vera Farmiga." That made me laugh a lot. And then not wearing weep proof eyeliner.
That was a good one.
All right, let's move into Cinema Sins. We're going to talk about Zack Snyder's Justice League again, because we released part two. I will say,
what is this movie?
I haven't heard of this. I will say before we get into this, that we will be releasing a full video of parts one and part two if you want to watch the whole thing together over the course of 45 minutes or whatever the entirety would be. But we did release the second part. Jeremy and Barrett wrote on this. What did Jeremy have to say?
He said, so writing Sins for Zack Snyder's Justice League was my first time watching it. What a mess. I realize the Snyder fans love it. That's fine. But this is not anyone's original version. This is an assembly cut with mostly finished effects. This is basically everything we shot with no cutting or editing whatsoever. Fine. There were enough calling for it that the exec saw a chance to make money via HBO Max. There was a little downside. But to call this the original version is just a lie. Had Snyder not left the project after his family tragedy, or better yet, had the tragedy never occurred, the studio would never have released a six-part, four-hour version of Justice League. It was ridiculously fun to write scenes for this movie. The anger was flowing, and the film gives so much ample material to sin. One of my favorites that I wrote is the lead-in was, he never fought us. Not us united. And then the narrator laughs and says, apes together strong, man bat say.
I love that so much.
I laugh so. That's one of the ones I wrote down too. And that's all Jeremy had to say.
It's amazing. I can kick us off on this. I think we've already kind of spoken our piece on Justice League. So I won't go into that anymore. But I will say some of the sins I liked from this video. And I agree. Both of these parts, this entire project for this 4+ hour movie is just hilarious. It's just so well done. Jeremy and Barrett did such a great job on this. This 4-hour movie has roughly 6 hours of exposition. Is beautiful. She could have called, texted, emailed, or sent a letter, but instead fake Clark's mom showed up right at Lois's door, and more importantly, why did you say that name after they said Martha? Loved that. I don't understand why Flash has to run fast and time things when Cyborg is here, and he should easily be able to create the charge needed and time it perfectly, but we needed a tense scene, and many people in the comments will be happy to explain why I'm wrong, but the movie doesn't really explain it, and so therefore, I'm right. And I just love that last part, which is like calling out this thing where the comments are like, no, it makes sense and this is why, but that doesn't eliminate the sin of the fact that the movie doesn't take the time or have the coherence to for us to understand what's going on easily. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. And then the part six shows up and he just goes, oh, Kelly Clarkson.
I wrote that down. So great.
There's just a lot that of
that. Amazing.
There's just a lot of that narrator torture in this. It's just the length of everything is so good. And then I also wanted to mention the taking a sin off for there being some blue in Batman's suit, super suit. And I hadn't really thought of that, but for a Batman fan, that quit's probably a thing because it's just been black for so long. But the original Batman suit had black and blue in it, and that blue is just
almost like a gray. Actually, it wasn't even really that black.
It was more like gray and blue. And so, yeah, there's an interesting thing where it's like it's just Batman has become, at least especially since the Nolan movies, you know, it's just a black suit. It's just black. And so I found that interesting because I hadn't thought about that. And as a Batman fan, I could be wrong. I'm assuming Jeremy wrote that because I know he's a huge Batman fan. And it just kind of made me think of something I hadn't thought of. And I love it when that happens. So I wanted to mention that as well.
Jeremy might actually kill me for this, or might think I'm stupid. But I actually, like, I don't know. The Batman character in film has just gone so dark that I don't think people realize that there is actually a lightheartedness quality to a lot of the comic series, especially older versions of it. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to the point where I do tend to go back more towards the Burton stuff just because it does have some, like, even though it is dark, definitely. I mean, there's it's got like that film noir quality, but there is like some goofiness to it, I guess, especially like in Batman Returns with like the circus and all that stuff. And even like the original animated series is great, but the 1960s series, like I've kind of gotten to where I've kind of gotten back into that just because I don't know, like I don't necessarily want like all the dark shit. Like, so it's kind of fun just to watch Adam West being goofy. I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but when you said that, that made me think of that. No, so.
I hear that. I hear that for sure. Why don't you continue on with some of your thoughts, Jonathan?
Yeah. I mean, we said our stuff last week. This is a fascinating project to me, even if I don't necessarily like it. And I agree with everything Jeremy's saying. There's absolutely no way in hell this is the movie that gets released. So, it's kind of a weird thing, but, I will say the videos kind of made me like it a little more in a weird way. I don't know that happens often, but I've actually heard some other people mention that, like on Twitter and stuff, that, they're kind of like, this was the way I should have watched it originally or something like that. So
yeah.
I thought that was funny. I still don't really like the movie though. It's not like all of a sudden I love the movie, but I just, mm-hmm. I don't know. It made me remember the parts of it I did like, I guess. I don't know. I love Barrett and Jeremy writing on this though, because it gets extremely horny. We have the Justice League of ass. And then there is the thing about the only rip I see is in that fucking torso. Am I right? So Barrett and Jeremy can bring the horn. It's pretty fun. Who wants to rewatch Mallrats? I thought that was just a hilarious end to that sin about going back to that comic book discussion in that movie. I love when they're reviving Superman, and it's, how the fuck do they know what they're doing? Is there an IKEA-like instruction booklet for reviving a super person? Because I still don't get that scene at all. Like, there's nothing about that makes me understand how those people were like, we know exactly what we're supposed to do. Yeah. To bring somebody back to life. There's a couple of just things in here. I love the term laser blasty save shot. I just thought that was funny. And then they start doing some names, and one of the names they say is Dick Bickle. I just thought that was hilarious. And then the only other thing I'll mention is I did like their sin about the treatment of Lois Lane. And there's that line about, she's the key to Superman. And then the sin is reducing Lois Lane to the key to Superman.
Yeah.
I thought was brilliant.
Yeah. So, but if they do a what if Lois Lane became Superman, Clark Kent would still have to save the day a couple of times.
But that's it. Lois Lane is a badass.
Yeah.
Like, if you ever read the comic or anything, like, Lois Lane is in a lot of ways, especially once they get married and stuff, like, Lois Lane is like the strength of that relationship. I mean, she keeps Superman grounded.
It's almost like she's the key to Superman. I'm sorry, I had to say it.
but she's just like, she's a great reporter, and she's this really strong, independent. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It is kind of silly how that character has become over the years.
Yeah. Danae, what about you?
Well, I'll just first start off by saying that I watched this video. I took some screenshots of ones that I really enjoyed. And then I was like, oh, I'll just go and I'll copy and paste the ones that I enjoyed from the script. So I have them in written format rather than just, having screenshots. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the script and I was like, oh, I don't remember this one. This is really funny. Well, it turns out I was just copying over Barrett's script that didn't make it into the final cut. So
what are those sins?
So I thought that I would start off the lead in for one of those that didn't make the cut that
we're doing a deleted sin segment. I love it.
I love it. We're not even getting Barrett's permission. We're just doing it.
The lead in was the demons must have gotten the scent of the mother box. So, and the sin was, I have to admit, I'm impressed Gal Gadot, got through this line while maintaining a straight face, but I'm still wondering how the fuck she would know this. And I thought that was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, that's really funny. And then I realized, oh, I don't remember that actually being in there. There were several. I just literally was just going through
Barrett's script
and picking Barrett's script. So nice. That I had to share that I did that.
That's hilarious.
I did like the mother box joke, though. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
But other ones that are definitely on the sexual side, too, that I really enjoyed was... the sin was essentially about Flash having a lot of time to do a lot of things, like mm-hmm. move a rock and eat a sandwich and check the Yankee score and masturbate to completion, take a nap, but then needed Cyborg to save the day. There were just so many of these times when both Jeremy and Barrett really did well to point out just all mm-hmm. those kinds of frustrations.
Yeah.
So there was actually one that I really liked, too, where I was like, oh, hey, remember when we had to wake up dead Superman because we needed him, but then he was kind of scary evil, So now we're just going to do it by ourselves because we didn't actually need him anyways, because we have the confidence now and we never really detoured from, it's just fine. Like the, how casual they all moved on. And I love pointing that kind of stuff out. Mm-hmm. Did you say, I don't think you guys said the Master Wayne, you need to see this. And the sin mm-hmm. is, pardon, might you be a deer and come hither to gander upon this cliche?
Yeah, that's good.
Probably one of my favorites is the, kill him, get to the carriage, protect the unity. And the sin is, those sound like three completely separate orders, though.
Yeah.
Good shit.
Good stuff. All right, let's move into Adam's family values. Chris and Ian writing on this one. What did Ian have to say about the process with this Adam's family sequel?
Look at Ian writing on everything. We're just giving him all the stuff. That's cool.
Somehow I watched this movie a billion times when I was younger, and I think that childhood memory is the best place to leave this movie. I like it well enough, but it's just fucking weird. What a bizarre choice of storyline. It feels more like a two-part TV show adventure than a feature film. Of course, there's the same old good means bad, sibling torture, everyone's indestructible bullshit, but I do think it's saved by the cast that is so enjoyable to watch and unafraid of committing themselves to the madness. Richie, as always, be Wednesday. Julia will always be Gomez, and Hudson will always be Morticia. Writing this one was a unique experience, as it was my first drop everything we need this video as soon as possible script. So I think I had about 2 or 3 days to turn the script in, and I usually like to take longer to watch the film a couple times and really nail the script. The tight deadline on this meant going with a lot more gut instinct sins and jokes, but I think it still came out really well, and it was a great learning process. I love wordplay, so Melanie Felony and Momsterbating were fun sins to come up with, of course, and my favorite sin to write was the one sending the 5,000 songs that Debbie claimed she was able to bring with her on her honeymoon. I enjoyed doing the research on the portability of one's music catalog, mainly because I'm a huge fucking nerd. It was a lot of fun to work out the tape technology of the time and then extrapolate when exactly it would have been possible to transport 5,000 romantic songs, assuming an average length of 3 to 4 minutes each. Turns out even the early iPods wouldn't have been able to do this, let alone a fucking cassette tape. Ah, the things I take joy from.
Yeah, it's part of our job. Part of our job. Danae, kick us off with some of your thoughts on this movie and script and video.
I have seen this movie. Shocker.
Man, everybody's going to be sober at the end of this episode.
You had seen the first one. You had seen the first one. Or did you write on the first one?
I wrote on the first one.
That's right. But you had seen it before, right? I was trying to remember our conversation about it on BTS when we talked about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is one that my parents kind of enjoyed. You know, like they didn't like to show the darker movies and things. This is probably as dark as they would let it get, you know, where they're wearing black and they're making, you know, morbid jokes and trying to kill each other with hatchets. That's about as like, okay, our children can watch this, you know. So I remember being delighted by it. And of course, Christina Ricci was fascinating to me, being somebody that I could relate to looking on the screen, finding her like darkness and her beautiful and her snarkiness, something that I was not taught to be. I was taught to be very polite. Now, I wasn't polite, but I was taught to be polite. It was an expectation, you know, like you. So it was like this, the juxtaposition of the what was very much like a church camp situation, which I had to go to church camp at least once. I felt more like Wednesday growing up. Like I related more to her personality and her just being done with everything around her. So I loved this movie because those scenes with those blonde pretty girls or whatever, and then like that's not what I wanted to be with Wednesday. That was like a big standout for me in a movie. So for that reason alone, I love this movie. that part alone,
that's all
I
you
love
need.
This movie. Yep. That's all I needed. So it's always fun to kind of go back and rewatch these films from certain parts of your life through the lens of sinning, and it was a fun one to see. Like, in fact, the sin off for Wednesday during that scene when the girl's like, is that your bathing suit? And she's like, is that your overbite? So I have an overbite. So for Wednesday to like just so casually be willing to just insult a pretty girl for her issues, I was like, this is amazing. You can do that.
Well, I wondered about that same thing, because I wondered for you if that was like conflicting, like that there was cognitive dissonance there where it's okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I find
that. I mean, when I was younger, I was very self-conscious of, you know, my appearance. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, but for Wednesday to kind of just so throw it out, like that pretty girls could be insulted too. You don't have to cower away from them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was kind of like she emboldened me a little bit, I feel. Yeah. But yeah, so I really enjoyed the send-off for that scene, because that was one of the ones I really enjoyed. I think there were several that I really liked, but the two other ones that made me laugh a whole bunch was the when just forgot his name, Uncle Fester is flustered by the woman, and he kind of is like, she's driving me wild, and the sin is announcing your boner to your family. And I just wasn't expecting that. So that was really funny. And then the other one, penis jokes for the win today. You know, when I first saw him, I thought it was from Europe. You did? Yeah, it's true. But I took a bath, and the sin is, that's your penis. Penis. It's just, I don't know why that one really killed me. I'm a simple woman. I'm sorry.
Because it's funny.
The whole thing was funny, but those two really got me.
It is. It's a great video. I think this movie is hilarious. I haven't seen it in a while, so I don't have a lot of specific thoughts on it, but I just think there's a really interesting humor tone that this movie, for the most part, succeeds in staying consistent with that I really enjoy. As far as sins and such, there are a lot of great ones in this. I know Thing may have issues communicating consent, but that doesn't mean you don't try, Debbie. I love that. What have we got here that makes this hut so harmonious? Kittens, check. Cute babies, check. Teddy bears, check. Random poster of Michael Jackson staring down at you, check. Wait, what? I just, the observation of that Michael Jackson poster was really funny to me. The lead in is, don't worry, we're getting out of here, but it's Disney. And then the sin is, what Marvel, Star Wars, and Pixar would probably say if they could talk. Made me laugh quite a bit. And then Ian mentioned a couple of the puns, the wordplay that I wanted to mention. But the one he didn't mention was the Italian hand job. And that is just such a perfect combination of thing. Like, it's just so great. And I really enjoyed that reference to
Aaron really likes Italian hand jobs.
Reference to the Italian job being done by a hand. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's just perfect. Very nicely done. Jonathan, what about you?
I don't like this movie. I feel like a lot of people just assume that I love the Addams Family. It's weird too, because I rewatched both the Addams Family series and the Munsters, because they're actually not very long. The Munsters, I think, has two seasons. I think they both have two seasons. And I did that like over the last couple years, and because those get compared a lot. The Munsters holds up beautifully. Like, that is like just a great like classic sitcom. Like, any, even like on the, I don't know if it's quite on the level, but like, it's in that, you know, discussion. It's in that, it's funny. Like, Dick Van Dyke is still funny. That mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't think it's as good as Dick Van Dyke, but it's really funny. Addams Family doesn't hold up at all, and I don't think the movies do either. I watched them with my daughter a couple years ago. I think the main thing with this movie that I don't like is that I love Christina Ricci, and she definitely has the best parts of this movie. But I also think that in the first one, it was definitely more balanced out between everybody, because it's a really nice cast. And then Wednesday was such a popular character. When they did the sequel, they focused quite a bit more on her, but then still tried to have this main storyline, which was another situation where somebody was fucking with Fester. They redid that whole thing and just kind of changed the angle. And then you get like less, they have the kid thing, but I feel like you get less Raul Julia and Angelica Houston in this, which I think is a downfall, because I think they're so good in that first one and they have such great chemistry. So I don't know. This one just doesn't really work for me. I think the Thanksgiving scene, which I think is what a lot of people go to, I think that's hilarious. I think there's a lot in that that I find really funny. And I love how she agrees to do it, but then makes it her own thing and just freaks everybody out. I Christina Ricci plays that so well. And but I've never been a huge fan of the movie, but I love this video. I love the telling your children bullshit stories like, this is exactly how you get ants. I mean, unplanned pregnancy. That was really good. And then I just loved the scene where it was like Thanksgiving, and then it was immediately followed by also musicals. That was really funny. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's any reason she can't spit this apple out, right? Am I missing something? I don't know why that cracked me up, but that really cracked me up. Because it's like, why is Mercedes McNabb still just holding that apple in her mouth?
Yeah.
And also, I love Mercedes McNabb in this movie, by the way. She plays the blonde that's, you know, terrorizing Christina Ricci. I think she does a really good job in that role. And I was looking her up because I hadn't seen her in a while, and she hasn't acted in anything since like 2011. So I don't know what happened there. She was on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They mentioned in this video she was in the movie Hatchet. But I remember her mostly from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. So
nice.
Anyways, love the video.
Great stuff. Okay, let's move into keeping tabs.
Hey, podcast peeps. It's me again. Those are my dogs. Those are my... every time I talk... Wow. Is this how Aaron feels? When we're... Okay. We're gonna try this. I just wanted to tell you about the survey again, which is at cinemasins.com/BTS. So go fill it out.
The internet is a communications tool used the world over where people can come together to bitch about movies and share pornography with one another.
Ha ha! Oh, jeez.
This is the most public yet of my many humiliations.
We're each going to talk about something from the process of putting stuff together for the week. Maybe a weird Google search, anything that stood out to us during the process. So, Jonathan, I know you didn't write on anything this week, so...
Yeah, and I didn't look up anything. We didn't have any Slack conversations that got me to do any investigation. So,
Danae, what about you? Do you have any keeping tabs?
So, yeah, I was really trying to figure out what to call the color on the wall for Rick and Morty, and so... You know, you call it, I called it like a watered down sherbet, but which is fine because that's kind of like ultimately where I landed. But I found several websites that try to name the color. And the one that was really interesting to me was colors.rtclick.com. And they have this color finder name. So the page is essentially this beautiful picture of a flower that has all these different dimensions of color on it.
Okay.
And you drag your mouse around on the picture of the flower until you kind of are in the color range that you're in. And as it kind of goes over, it gives you not only the number of the colors that you can copy it over to, like all the colors, you know, they're assigned a number. So if you're like doing a website and you want to have a specific themed color for your website, you can type in like F984EF and then it's it's this particular pink color, whatever. But then it actually has the title of what is the most common name for said color. So I just did one, for example, that's a pink that is most likely associated with light fuchsia pink. So there's just, so if you're looking for the name of a color, like Rosso Corsa, you know, you can find that on the site, or like C or Mercury, soft peach, almost black, Haiti, you know, like carousel pink. There's just all these words that we need to describe color. We can't just say Rick and Morty's wall color is FF8700. You know,
that might be funny actually, but yeah,
that would have been funny. Fuck.
No, there's always a next time. There's always a next time.
There's always a next time.
I thought Sherbert was funny as well. So yeah, I think we were good either way.
Anyway, there's websites for everything. But I was really delighted to find this one. So I thought I would just share it again. It's on colors.artyclick.com. You can click on that one and you can find their color picker. They actually do like the palette selection too. So if you're trying to find a palette color range for a project, you can select a color and it'll show you the colors that go really well with the, you know, the image that you've uploaded or something like that. So I'm not really good with interior design, so these kinds of sites I always find to be helpful. But even on just projects, for example, like if you're doing, you know, like a logo or a branding image, oftentimes you need to have colors that all like kind of go well together. And sites like this can kind of give you that option. So
nice.
Anyhow, enjoy.
Well, My keeping tabs is about the button guy. And no, I am not going to explain the joke all over again.
Would you say this is a callback?
It's a callback.
To
something we talked about earlier. This was the very first sin in the button guy series where the show says something about Stark being the button guy. And so the sin is the church I grew up in had a button guy. He wore all sorts of weird buttons on his suit. He seemed fine until one day he brought a piece of wood and axe to service and started chopping it up in front of the congregation without warning while shouting about pruning the evil branches. Keep an eye on Stark is all I'm saying. Danae was flabbergasted when she read this story and I think put something in the notes of, please tell me this is not a true story or something along those lines. So my keeping tabs is that I'm here to say it's a true story. From when I was growing up as a kid, you may or may not know that my dad is a pastor. And so the church that we were at, there was a guy who just wore a whole bunch of buttons on his tie and jacket, and he was the button guy. And then one day he showed up unannounced to church with a piece of wood and a hatchet that he hid under the pew. And at a certain point in the service, he just walked up front and started like chopping this wood with this hatchet and just like, you know, street corner proselytizing about the pruning of the branches. And it was, as a child, one of the funniest things I'd ever seen. And I was so unaware of all the stuff as an adult where you're like, are we all in danger? Like, where is this going? Like, you know, so I remember.
Or is he okay?
Right. Like, all that stuff as a child was just not in my brain. My brain was just like, this is hilarious. Like, this guy is funny. But they eventually, like, had to, I think it was my dad and, a couple of the people in the congregation went up to him and started talking to him, and you know, one of them was able to get the hatchet away from him first, and then they kind of walked him out. But it was kind of one of those situations that's never going to leave your brain. And here, you know, however many years later, using it in a script to start what is essentially probably one of the best series of callback sins we've ever done. On the button guy stuff. So
that is a crazy story, though. That's really insane that actually happened. But I love that. I love that kid's perspective on things. You know, because you're definitely not thinking. And even back then, you know, I think now more people would be, you know, thinking about mental illness and stuff like that. Back then, I don't think they would have even been doing that. They'd just be like, "This dude's crazy," you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and not even thought about what could be causing that. But yeah, no, I'm glad everybody was okay.
I do believe he got some help, some mental health help. I think that's an important part of the story. And I could be wrong about that. I was a child. I don't have a lot of you know, clear memory of the repercussions or, you know, what happened next. But I do believe that was what was sought for him, was some mental health help. So. Anyhow, that's my keeping tabs. Yes, that is a true story. Yes, to all the adults, it was one of the most terrifying moments of their lives. And to me as a child, I was cracking up.
It's crazy how that works.
Yep. All right, let's move into the comments section. I want to know
what you're thinking. I appreciate your honesty. You're a real straight shooter.
You are the ones who are the ball lickers.
We're each going to talk about some feedback from the week. Maybe a comment from a video, maybe something on Discord, could be from Twitter, anywhere that you are giving us feedback on stuff. I'll go first, since I finished off keeping tabs. I just wanted to mention a thank you to Vintage BS, who says, as a doctor, I'm well amazed at the use of the phrase proprioceptive training. This was in the sin about Captain Carter just having apparently downloaded the information about how to do a wheelie on a motorcycle and, you know, use it, that kind of stuff. And I was trying to think of the exact word for the difference between stuff you can learn, like as far as knowledge, and the difference between physical attributes and the way you use your physical attributes. And I remembered a physical therapist who had taught me about proprioception and the idea of that it's not just your physical capabilities, it's your the intricate way you can use the different limbs and different capabilities at the same time. So, like, examples of people who have great proprioception are drummers. Drummers have great proprioception because they have to do one thing with the right hand, one thing with the left hand, another thing with, you know, different feet. Skateboarders have great proprioception. And so that reminded me of, you know, the Captain Carter trying to do all these things or whatever. So I was glad that there was that one out there who appreciated it.
Citizens writers, we have to think and write and watch all at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. No, that is some sort of mental proprioception maybe, but not physical for sure.
Mental handicap maybe.
Yeah. Danae, what about you?
I wrote down one from S. Wall who says this. It just dawned on me. Batman dreamt about Joker giving him a reach around.
Is that the full comment?
That's the full comment.
What did you love about that comment, Danae?
It just made me think. He did.
I don't even know that the movie's saying that, is it? I think Joker's saying
that. But the Joker scene was part of Batman's dream.
Well, but that just means Batman dreamed about Joker saying that. It doesn't mean...
Yeah, and isn't that interesting?
Sure. This is the best comment section ever.
I thought it was hilarious.
It is. No, it's funny.
And it's something fun to think about.
It is something to think about.
It's something in his conscious somewhere, you know, like mm-hmm. in his subconscious somewhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just dawned on me.
See, like, I think some people would be like, oh, this is a wink and a nod to what's coming next. But in actuality, that was Batman's dream that he had. Mm-hmm.
But it could be Batman's dream because he has interacted with that future before in other of the DC movies. And so, like, it's a true thing, alternate, you know, thing that is in his consciousness now because Flash has opened that up in his mind.
So... It wasn't a dream.
There's a possibility that it's not a dream. There's a possibility.
But if it's a dream, then he dreamt about Joker giving him a reach around. And not, isn't that interesting?
But yes, it just dawned on me that this is a great comment. Jonathan, what about you? What's your comment section?
Oh, mine was from Adam's Family Values. It was just some guy without a mustache said, I would have honestly expected 666 cents at least, which is a great point. And I just wanted to... Tell just some guy without a mustache, if you'd like to go to a channel that would address, that would, you know, have the sense of humor to do that with a show that deals with this type of things, this channel TV Sense did the Lucifer pilot.
That's true.
And you should check that out and maybe you'll be happy.
That is true. That is true.
And you can thank Ian if you are happy.
As is usually the case. All right, let's move into Beyond the Sins.
To infinity and beyond!
Somewhere beyond my wild history.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
We're just going to chat about something else from the world of pop culture that we have seen, and Jonathan is going to start us off. What's in your world, Jonathan?
Yeah, so I wish I'd known about this last week since we're recording on October 1st, so this will actually start today, but this will release like the 7th, so there's still going to be plenty of month left, but AMC Theaters, select AMC Theaters, so you'll have to check your local listings or whatever they say these days. They're doing this thing this month called Thrills and Chills, and what it's going to be is every Friday and every Wednesday night and every Friday night in the month of October, so starting tonight, October 1st, I'm going to go check this out. I'm really excited. They're showing a horror movie. Here where I'm at, they're showing it at 7 o'clock. I don't know if it's going to be the same time everywhere. I don't know how they're doing it. But if you just check your listings, you'll be able to find it. But what's cool about it, I think, is that you don't know what it is. It's a surprise screening. So it could be anything. That's a horror movie. And they said they're going to mix in newer movies with classic. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm excited. I like stuff like that. I think it's fun. There's a horror movie marathon I go to every year, and the thing I like about it the most is that it's mystery. You never know what's going to be aired. You're just sitting in the theater waiting for the next movie. You have no idea what it's going to be. So that's kind of what this made me feel like. So I'm going to go tonight and see. It could end up sucking. I have no idea. Like, I can't. I don't know if this is really a recommend, but it's more just an observation that if you're one of those people that watches, you know, some horror movies in the month of October to get in the mood. This might just be something fun to do, and it's inexpensive. It's $5. If you are an AMC Stubs member, you can use your AMC Stubs membership. This isn't like a like a special screening or anything where they don't let you use it. You can use it for that week if you want to. And yeah, so just check your AMCs around your area. I know there's like four or five in the Middle Tennessee area that are doing it. And you'll just look on Wednesday or Friday night. It'll say like Thrills and Chills special screening or something. And, you know, you can buy your ticket and be surprised. I just thought that was cool. I thought that was kind of a fun thing that was going on this month, so I thought I'd mention it.
Nice. I'll go next. I got to talk about Squid Game. I know a lot of people are. This is on Netflix. There are 9 episodes. This is a show from Korea, a TV show from Korea, and I would highly recommend watching the subtitled version, not the dubbed version, because the performances in this are really, really good. But this is a show that is gaining a lot of buzz, mainly for just how kind of out there it is. But we've seen pop culture like this before. Like, you know, you've got movies like Battle Royale or, you know, The Hunger Games, whatever the case may be, where we integrate the idea of, you know, survival games, like actual survival games. But the difference with this one is how much it's not even the first piece of pop culture to really emphasize the difference between classes. And kind of have that be the main theme. But this one is so purposeful about how it's portraying the idea of the haves and the have-nots and what it means to live in a society that honors money above all else, right? The idea of gotta get mine, gotta, you know, progress, have to get the right amount of money, all that kind of stuff is here. And it's so beautifully done. I think by the time I have finished this, I've watched all 9 episodes. By the time I finished it, I was into it much more for the thematic stuff in the performances. There are some scenes that blew me away than I was for the crazy like survival game type stuff that is in here. I will say you get to about the 6th or 7th episode and some English speaking characters are introduced. The English-speaking acting in this is terrible. And, like, these characters are so paper-thin, one-note, horribly performed.
You don't think it's intentional?
I don't know. The terribleness of the characters in ethically and morally, I think, is completely intentional. I wouldn't think it was intentional for them to be bad performances.
Gotcha. I was just curious.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that just because that is a distraction, I think, from what the show is trying to do, I think. So I guess what I'm saying is this is not a perfect production. Like, you're going to come up against some things and be like, that's not as polished as I'm used to it being, that kind of thing. But as far as the conceptual world-building thematic stuff is in this, I think it is really, really good. So at the end of the day, it's a recommend for Squid Game with the caveat that it is definitely, rated R. I know it's a TV show, but it's a hard R at times. Especially for violence.
It's Netflix, though. It's not, right. It's correct. Not, correct. It's not a network show. So, correct. It does its thing.
But trigger warnings for violence, suicide, a whole bunch of stuff. I would check out if you have a specific trigger that you're trying to avoid, something like, you know, how does the dog die.com or something like that, which I don't even know if they do TV shows, but, you know, whatever.
Does the squid die?
One of the things I also loved about this show, which I don't think it's too spoilery to talk about conceptually what they're doing here, but they're using children's playground games as death games. So basically it's the games you played on the playground, but the result isn't that you lose. The result is that you die. So the first episode is titled Red Light, Green Light. So there you go. You can kind of associate what might happen with that. But the way that the show integrates these childhood games was really fascinating to me because some of them are Korean childhood games that I never played on the playground. And so it was interesting to see like how other cultures, grow up, what they grow up playing and that kind of stuff. And Squid Game is one of those games. Squid Game is a game that they apparently played on the playground there that I'd never heard of before. Cool. It's a very, very fascinating, compelling watch with all the caveats. Squid Game.
Yes, and if you want to know how fascinated Aaron is, he has talked about it every day on Slack. for the last 7 days.
Every hour, I would say. There's like every hour I'm on there posting something about this series.
I love it. I love people being excited about stuff. It's fun.
It's interesting to me what captures culture, and
yeah.
And for whatever reason, like this is just something popped up on Netflix. I think Netflix is probably the best streamer at this, where because they have the most subscribers and because people kind of use it as a hub, there are a lot of people that Netflix is their quote unquote cable or satellite or whatever. They just go there and whatever's in the top 10. It has this unique ability to really launch something into the cultural consciousness just by putting it on their platform.
And they're not a traditional studio, so they don't. I mean, they do buy properties, like they buy IP. But I'm just saying, in general, like they're not so indebted to their IP. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Paramount, Peacock, Disney, they're going to be doing stuff along their lines. Whereas Netflix can just do whatever. They can go buy these foreign shows, or mm-hmm. you know, they take chances like that, which is always fascinating to me.
Today, gotta be on the sins this week.
Let's talk about food.
Yeah,
I found these things and I'm obsessed with them. Let me tell you the glorious thing about TJ Maxx and Tuesday Morning and shops like that. Sometimes you go in there and they have these little treats and you're like, oh, $5, I'll try that. And then you're like, I need these in my life forever. So you go to the website and you realize that actually it's a $30 treat that you have in your hand and you only got it for $5. So then your instinct is to go back to TJ Maxx and buy every single can.
Or at least six of them.
This is a wafer roll by Sushina Inamori, or Kukana Inamori if you're from the Ozarks. These are these delicious cream-filled wafer rolls. I'm going to show the chat, and I apologize to anyone who can't see, but essentially it looks like a straw cannoli.
Yeah, it's like those coffee stirrer treats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've tried these before, but these in particular are so good. A European-style artisan wafer roll, generously filled with rich vanilla cream. They're indulging, they're crunchy, they're bursting with flavor, and I am obsessed with them, and I've eaten all of them myself.
I think we need to advertise for them, and that way you'll get more of it. You know, I think we need to reach out.
My problem is sometimes I just want something sweet, and then there's too sweet, and then this is perfect because it's one little, like, it's a straw. It's like a little cigar. It's like a Swisher Sweet. Oh, just delicious.
What are, until what are you they eat called? The whole can in one sitting. And you're like, oh, my tummy. No,
I am resisting the urge. But what's great about them is they really light, like the wafer around the outside is really light. And then it has the cream on the middle, but it's not too much cream. So it's just perfect for a little satisfaction of a sweet tooth without going overboard. And then usually I just have like two or three and then I'm done for the day.
I don't think I'm much of a wafer person, but that sounds very appetizing. Yeah.
I mean, they're so good.
What are they called again?
So the company is Cucina. Kushina?
Okay.
Maybe? And Amore. But I'm saying Amore.
But what is that actually called that? Like that?
That's
that...
the company. These are just simply called wafer rolls.
Oh, gotcha. Cream filled.
They come in a can Cucina, that looks kind of like a... Doesn't this look like an ice cream container?
I was thinking it looked like a coffee thing, but it kind of, I see it now with the colors and everything. Yeah, I see it.
Cucina and the More is kitchen and love, is what that translates to. Like, that's what I thought. So it's basically like love of the food, love of the kitchen and love.
Well, that's what Danae is expressing. So I guess
vanilla,
they did their job.
These vanilla wafers, man, I'm obsessed with them right now. Anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about this week.
Nice.
Fight me.
Nobody's gonna fight you. Food is pop culture. We've talked about this before.
I wish I had some of those I could sneak into my AMC Thrills and Chills movie tonight.
There you go.
while watching Squid Game. I don't know. I'm trying to work all three things into one. I don't know if that works.
I get it. Yeah, so that's some wafer rolls from Cucina Inamori. Squid Game is on Netflix, and Thrills and Chills, AMC Theaters, is doing that. That's going to do it for Behind the Sins this week. Don't forget to make sure you are subscribed. Go ahead and leave a comment or rating as well. If you've got anything you want to send us, you can mail it to us at P.O. Box 881, Republic, Missouri, 65738. You can hang out with us on Twitter. I'm at Aaron Dicer. She is at Danae Says.
DeneeSays. Also on Twitch.
And he is at SamLoomis13. So for Jonathan Watkins, Danae Hughes, a button guy, and myself, we will see you next week.
Happy National Inner Beauty Day!
Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to bts@cinemasins.com. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Find more ways to connect by visiting cinemasins.com/BTS.
Oh, hello.
Okay, back to...
Oh, I arrive and you're like, okay, gotta go to something else.
You can see why I was distracted, yes?
Yes, I can.
This is not centered. It'll drive me crazy. Hold on just one moment. I must fix these beaches.
What's the over-under on how long before Jonathan mentions it?
I can't hear you. What?
What's the over-under on how long before Jonathan mentions it?
Instantly.
What up?
What up, what Jonathan? Up?
Oh, it's a bandana day. I love it.
Bandana day. It's amazing.
Love bandana days. Danae rocks them.
We took wagers on how long it would take you to mention the bandana. Danae win.
It's because I'm a fan. I mean, I don't know why that's a bad thing.
He's a band fana. That's what
he's
he is.
He's a band fana.
I wish I could pull him off.
You could.
You could.
And you could put him on, too.
What? Oh, Danae did it. She's the one that
was an Aaron joke.
I held
that was an Aaron joke. I mean, you're fired, but
fuck,
awesome.
Fuck, I peaked. No.
Speaking of which, I'm still so just weirded out about this documentary on HBO Max that, like, of shit that took place, like, down the street from where I lived my whole life.
Yeah.
Really?
I don't remember. And then Barrett's even like, oh, yeah, dude, we went to school with their daughters. And I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about? So I have to watch this. I'm hoping it'll spark some memories. I haven't asked my mom about it either. I mean, I'm sure she'll know more than me because she was an adult. But
yeah, that's weird.
You're not on Not Work Chat a lot, Danae. I think that's where I put this. So I was watching videos for today to prep. Mm-hmm. And I don't pay the extra $15 a month. So I get ads and I usually don't pay attention to them. So I was typing something. I was like, oh, an ad's coming up. And then all of a sudden I hear Dan Miller's voice, which is this newscaster from Tennessee that he'd passed away like 7 or 8 years ago. But he was like his voice has been in my ear since I was a kid.
Okay.
So I'm like, that sounds like Dan Miller. And then all of a sudden he said, you know, blah, blah, blah in Williamson County. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? And then it ends up, it's this documentary on HBO Max about this woman that some kind of weight loss like thing, but it turned into like a church and a cult kind of thing. And then she died in a plane crash, I think, earlier this year. So I don't know a ton about it, but it was just weird because she lived like maybe 2 miles from where I lived. And apparently her kids went to school with me and Barrett. And I don't remember any of this. I don't think the kids were in my class. Like, I think they were younger than me, but
yeah, this is
they
Brentwood,
were around
right?
Barrett's age. Yeah. Well, Brentwood is, yeah, where this took place, where the church is and stuff. The school is in Nashville, David Lipscomb. Now it's Lipscomb Academy. It's in Green Hills. You know what Green... But this all stuff took place in Brentwood. Yeah.
I think the closest thing we have here, and today more than me, because I'm not from here, but is the Hulu series The Act, which was like the Munchausen by proxy thing happened here.
Yeah. I did. You guys told me that because I knew that story because mm-hmm. I had seen a true crime thing on. I haven't watched The Act, but I think the main reason I haven't watched The Act is just because I know the story so well. I don't mm-hmm. know. It just feels. I'm sure it's great. Have you seen it?
I haven't, and I didn't. Oh, okay. I don't think Danae has either. But I wondered if Danae would have some like, oh my goodness, I know where that is. Oh my goodness, I've been there. You know, kind of stuff.
I love Patricia Arquette and stuff. Well, that's what Barrett said. Barrett said that first episode of the documentary, he said it's just like aerial Brentwood porn. I'm like, oh my God, I have to watch this.
The other thing is on Jason Bourne's like data sheet or license, I forget. He's from Nixa, Missouri,
which is this
tiny little town that's like 5 miles away.
That's so weird. That's got to be in the book too. So I wonder if what's the author's name? He's dead, but I think it's Robert Ludlum, maybe. I wonder if he's from there.
I don't know. It's just a weird thing where you're just like, Nixa.
I get to do that next week. I'm so excited. I've never gotten to do that.
Oh, respond via email, not on the show?
Yes, and you have to read exactly what I said.
I know what I could do. I could go make coffee right now.
after we've started the live show. So not before when I was like, hey, Danae, anything else you need to do for the next 5 minutes or should we go ahead and start? No, I'm ready. Let's do this. So after the live show starts, you're going to disappear and go make coffee for 5 minutes. Is that what we're doing?
Yes.
Do it. Go get some coffee.
Hell yes.
Josh says, hey, question for Aaron. On an old episode of Sincast, Jeremy mentioned you used to do voiceover work. Anything interesting or that we would know?
Have you ever been to Home Depot?
Lowe's, actually.
Lowe's. Yes, I apologize.
Yeah. If you've ever worked at Lowe's in the last 10 years, you may have heard my voice. I do.
It's so great when people learn that. Like, when you'll have, because you get messages sometimes, right, from people that work at Lowe's. And they're like, that really sounded like you. And you're like, it was me.
It was me. That was me. Yeah, I do the voiceover for the training videos for Lowe's. I haven't done one in a long time, so I don't know if they're just not doing any new training material, or maybe they moved to a different voice person, which is possible as well.
Or they're just not changing them. They're just using all the old
they're
ones.
Just using them. I think the most recent person who has come to me and be like, I got a job at Lowe's, and I swear the person that does the voiceover sounds just like you. The last time I heard that from someone was a couple years ago. It was okay. Pre-pandemic. So I think it would have been like 2018, 2019. So at least up until that point, I played the voiceover game for a while, which is it's an exhausting game. If you really want a career in voiceover, it is constant auditions until you get to be an elite or like an A-lister, and then you have an agent and, you know, you'll get shopped. But before that, it is just audition after audition after audition if you really want to play the game.
Well,
I've never really had the time to do that well, and so all of my gigs were pretty much either word of mouth or somebody hearing my demo. I would do as much voiceover work as I could. I just don't have time to seek it out.
That's what my daughter really wants to do eventually, because, you know, she's just started doing acting classes and stuff, and she's even got an agent, but she wants to eventually go into voice work. I don't know if she will once she finds out how hard it is, but, you know, at 10, she's like, I want to voice animated movie stuff. So
that's great. We'll see. Probably my most heard voiceover is for a YouTube channel that I do voiceover for called TV Sins. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that. That's probably the most my voice has ever been heard.
Well, how's your coffee?
I haven't had it yet. I got distracted.
Oh, it's hot.
Because I went out there and my husband is jumping around the kitchen like a child.
Hmm.
Like, no, not even a child. Think aerobics video, 1982.
Okay. Yeah.
What's he excited about?
He has purchased tickets next month to see AEW Rampage and AEW Full Gear pay-per-view. Two nights back-to-back. He is going to be directly beside the ring. In one of them, he'll be on TV. In the other one, he'll be slightly left of the TV.
I remember we had a trivia question one time at a trivia night where it was like what's the center of the United States? Like what state or city or something? And I told Chris, I thought I was like, I don't know, North Dakota. And he just looked at me like he was very disappointed that I was on his team. But then come to find out, North Dakota is the center of, I think it's like of North America, which is kind of funny. So
you were kind of in the
it was problem. Totally lucky though. Like, I didn't know that. I just found it out later. But I've never seen such a look of disappointment.
They signed a couple big names. I'm not into wrestling either, so I don't remember what those names
were. Yeah, you could tell me like, yeah, they signed, you know, Jim Backbone Davis. I'd be like, okay.
Already had Jim Backbone Davis. they actually signed Frank Hipbone Davis, which those are the Davis brothers. Hipbone is connected to the Backbone, and they tag
just
team,
like probably so. Lost listeners that love wrestling. They're like, fuck these guys.
Shut up. Is that too much?